Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. That is www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to Between the Beltways, a political podcast series from the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Each month, your hosts, Dr. Deepan Chatterjee and Dr. Shreyasi Deb, will explore the races that will shape the central Maryland counties of Howard, Montgomery, and Prince George's in the upcoming midterm elections.
Welcome to the fifth episode of Between the Beltways. This is Deepan Chatterjee.
Hi, this is Shreyasi Deb.
And we are recording on the weekend right before the primaries in Maryland. So some of these results might already be known by the time you guys listen to our episode. And as far as this episode is concerned, we are doing it a little different this time. We are scrapping our usual analysis section at the beginning, and we're doing a long interview because the person we have as our guest today, Zach Cohen, is an expert analyst, and Zach currently serves as the national reporter for National Journal Hotline, a daily tip sheet on the latest in American presidential, congressional, and gubernatorial elections. He also writes weekly for National Journal Daily. He was previously a digital editor responsible for producing and editing stories for the latest edition. He also did a wake-up call throughout 2016, and he also occasionally produced National Journal's weekly podcast. Before joining National Journal in 2014, he interned at the Washington Post, Time Magazine, USA Today, and PBS Media Shift, and wrote about politics and government for New Voices. Zach was born and raised in New Jersey and got his bachelor's degree in international relations from American University, where he served as editor-in-chief of The Eagle, which is the school newspaper. So welcome, Zach.
Happy to be here.
So Zach, my first question to you is, in the upcoming primary on Tuesday in Maryland, who do you think are the important candidates in the Maryland gubernatorial Democratic primary?
So it's a very crowded field, but the two major candidates to watch are Georgia's county executive for sure, Baker, who is obviously not seeking re-election and is instead running for governor, and Ben Jealous, who's the former president of the NAACP. These two men have gotten the majority of the attention, the polling, the fundraising, all pointing to a two-man matchup between the two of them. And they have very different ideas of where they want to see the state go. Sherman Baker, as I said, as a county executive, has more governing experience, is backed by state leadership, both in, in Annapolis and in the counties who have major political figures. But then Ben Jealous has backing from national Democrats, people like Senators Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, who have all been campaigning with him in the final division of this primary. And he, Mr. Jealous, is taking on much more of a progressive stance on a lot of issues that is setting him apart from County Executive Baker and is making for a really interesting contest.
So how do these candidates, so you mentioned it's a crowded field, how do these candidates match up against Governor Larry Hogan, who, as you know, is one of the most popular governors in the country?
He is. Governor Hogan, although he is a Republican and is running for re-election in a state that voted for Hillary Clinton quite overwhelmingly, he is quite popular. He is governed as a moderate, and he also has some personal appeal. He likes to reach out to people on Facebook and Twitter directly and has separated himself from President Trump on a number of key issues. He also underwent treatment for cancer recently and has gendered, I think, some personal sympathy there. So none of these candidates are as well known as Governor Baker and certainly not as well liked, although that could change as the months go on, as the rest of the state and beyond Democratic primary voters get to learn a little bit more about whoever the nominee is. But they're going to start an uphill climb against a pretty formidable opponent.
Right, and he enjoys a very high level of popularity across party lines, as you said. And I think he has a close to a 70-71% approval rating right now. And you also mentioned some of the reasons why you think he is so popular. So what do you think has enabled him to maintain this popularity? Because, as you know, in the past, Bob Ehrlich was Republican governor of Maryland, but he only served one term and he really couldn't engender this kind of approval or popularity. So what do you think has enabled Larry Hogan to maintain this kind of popularity?
Yeah, I would like to add Governor Larry Hogan served in Governor Ehrlich's administration.
Right. So Governor Hogan was elected in 2014 during a pretty good Republican year where he's a lot of Republicans and not so much Democrats. And he ran on a platform of being opposed to taxes that were implemented under Governor Martin O'Malley's administration, the former presidential candidate. And he's sort of kept that sort of fiscal conservative vibe, but also he's pro-choice. So he's more liberal on some social issues. Mm-hmm. As I said, he's distanced himself from President Trump at a time when Democrats are looking for ways to oppose this current presidential administration and the Republican Congress. And so he's sort of governed as a moderate, and some Democrats have griped that there are times where he'll sign on to certain policies at the very last minute to make himself look more bipartisan than he really is. But it's a strategy that's working for him. Mm-hmm. I will add that although he is popular and people say, I like Governor Hogan or I like what he's done, when you ask people would they vote for either Governor Hogan or a generic Democrat, he does tend to do less well. He's either at 50% or even lower than that, which is not a great place to be for an incumbent governor. You want at least half of people saying, I'm ready to reelect you. And in a state like Maryland for Governor Hogan, that means not just winning Republicans, but as well as Democrats and independents. Mm-hmm.
So my question then is a perfect segue to what we are discussing. What are the major issues, the big issues in the Maryland gubernatorial race this time?
In the primary, it's been a lot about single payer. That's something Mr. Jealous pushed pretty vehemently over the last few months. He believes that the state should provide a state-sponsored health care insurance to all citizens, and not really anybody else in the field backed that. County Executive Baker is opposed to it. He thinks it's a little too expensive. Other candidates have said, well, we can pursue a public option, meaning we could provide health insurance to certain citizens, but maybe not all of them. So that's been a big issue. Marijuana legalization has come up a lot as a way both to raise revenue for the state and as a criminal justice issue. And so those are things that the primary voters have been talking a lot about. And in the general election, I think those will come out depending on who the nominee is and what Governor Hogan wants to talk about is should the state keeping taxes lower or managing the budget well. And Democrats will be looking for somebody who can bring forth sort of progressive change that they're looking for during the Trump administration.
So we're going to move on a little bit from the gubernatorial race to some more questions on the Senate, the U.S. Senate, as well as some national politics. So I believe last Tuesday was the Virginia primaries, and candidate for the Senate who's challenging Tim Kaine, a Democrat, won. Corey Stewart on the Republican side won the Republican primary. Corey Stewart, as we all know, you know, has sided with white supremacists before. Is pretty controversial candidate. So do you think that Corey Stewart winning the Republican primary has made it somewhat easier for Tim Kaine for the Senate race in Virginia?
I think in this environment where you're seeing Democrats are turning out higher numbers than Republicans, not just in Virginia, but in other states. Remember, the state elected a new governor last year, Governor Ralph Northam. Mm-hmm. And Corey Stewart ran in that race as well and actually lost the nomination. I think either him or Nick Freitas, who was very close to winning the Republican nomination to face Senator Kaine, they both would have had a tough time. Senator Kaine is well-liked. He's a former governor, former mayor of Richmond, ran as Hillary Clinton's running mate in 2016, so has a national donor base and fan base, which all would be very helpful. And Clinton and Kaine did win the state in 2016, and you're not going to see a lot of Republican money. There's other states to the map where that's going to be spent instead, places like North Dakota and Missouri and Indiana and West Virginia that Trump won by larger margins that have Democrats up for re-election, and Republicans, if they want to maintain control of the Senate and not grow their numbers there, that's where they're going to spend their attention and not so much on a place like Virginia.
So what do you think, since we are talking about the U.S. Senate races, what do you think is Minority Leader Schumer, Chuck Schumer of New York, strategy and leadership to win over the Senate?
I actually wrote a story about this a couple of days ago. Senator Schumer is not a forward-facing figure for the party. He's not somebody like Minority Leader Pelosi over in the House. He's similar to Senator McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, in that he's in charge of keeping the message together of the caucus and helping to raise money for them and bringing in key figures to help raise money that these candidates can then go use and spend how they want. What I've heard from sources is that Senator Schumer is involved in behind the scenes in terms of asking about polling, asking about messaging, and giving advice. And he constantly makes himself available to these senators to be a help to them. He's been in Senate Democratic leadership for something between 10 and 20 years, so he's very experienced on this. So I think you'll see him play sort of a behind-the-scenes role, but a very important one over the next few months. Mm-hmm. What Republicans will do in exchange is they're going to try to tie all of these Democrats to him. You were seeing that in TV advertising already, saying Senator Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota is standing with her liberal pal Chuck Schumer of New York to pass all of these policies. It's sort of a shorthand for bashing Democrats and tying them to somebody who culturally might be different than somebody who lives in a state like North Dakota.
Yes, that's a very interesting point that you raised. That's going to play out very well, right?
In
October, yeah.
So my next question to you is, as a psychologist, I'm very concerned about this issue that recently came up, and it has really taken over, has pretty much caught hellfire within the past week, this issue of the separation of migrant children from their parents at the border who are applying for asylum. Many physician organizations, including the American Psychological Association, have issued statements against this policy, saying that it causes eternal damage to children, their psychological makeup, their neuronal makeup, but it causes damage to their personality for life. So what do you think is the Senate Democratic strategy to combat this issue? I know President Trump issued an executive order to stop this after various people in his administration said different things, even sometimes using the Bible to justify the policy and then flatly denying the policy. And then President Trump rescinded the policy this past week. But do you think the Senate Democrats could use this as a strategy to combat the problem? Because as we know, they are a little more vulnerable in the Senate than the House during this upcoming midterms.
Yeah, there was Senator Feinstein of California, Dianne Feinstein, put forward a bill that would have prevented the separation of children at the border, but Republicans have sort of dismissed that policy as being too lenient and potentially would make it too difficult for border security to control the border and enforce the laws there. There has been movement. I think Senator Feinstein is also working with Senator Ted Cruz, who's a Republican from Texas, to work forward on a policy that would balance the need to keep families together, as you said, or not separating children from their parents. I think there's some broad bipartisan consent, except for a small pocket of Republicans that think that this is a bad idea. But while also maintaining border security, and there's constant talk about a broader comprehensive immigration reform that maybe this could be rolled into. I think it's unclear. As we're recording today on Fridays, President Trump is campaigning in Nevada. There were two House proposals that didn't make it through, either because they didn't get a vote or they just failed. And so we're sort of in limbo right now. There's only so much that President Trump can do from an executive order standpoint. There's some question of whether what he did can stand up to legal scrutiny. So it will fall on Congress to come up with a permanent solution. What makes it difficult is we're not sure where President Trump stands on a final solution. So that'll be worth watching over the next couple of months, especially the closer we get to the midterms.
Right.
So, Zach, there are a number of vulnerable Democrats in the Senate who are up for re-election in states that President Trump won handedly. We just mentioned Senator Heidi Heitkamp. There's just Senators John Tester, Claire McCaskill, Joe Manchin. Do you think in any of these states, the Affordable Care Act, the way it stands currently, and the rising health insurance costs are a big issue in the campaigns?
Absolutely. Democrats actually want to talk about health care. This stands in stark contrast to previous midterm elections where Republicans were talking about Obamacare, right, as their way to gin up support. And actually, Democrats are saying, look, there are parts of the Affordable Care Act that work. We want to cover pre-existing conditions. We want younger adults to be able to stay on their parents' health care plan. And so this is something that Democrats are bringing up, including the ones you mentioned that are in states that Trump won by double digits. There are five states that Trump won by double digits, but another five that Trump won by narrow margins. So these are where control of the Senate will be decided. I think a lot of Democrats are going to point to rising premiums as being the fault of Republicans who have been in charge for a year and a half and haven't been able to fix any problems with the Affordable Care Act. And so I think you'll see some messaging around that. But I think it will be continue to be the dominating issue this year, unless other news tends to intervene in the meantime, which does tend to happen.
Okay, great. So on a big national stage level, and I'm talking about a kind of like a national policy, in a few key points, what do you think are the chances of the Democrats taking over the House and the Senate? And then what is their national strategy, you think? Again, we have discussed that the Senate is definitely more challenging for the Democrats than the House. But what do you think are some key strategical points that the Democrats are going to come up with? We discussed healthcare, but what do you think are some other issues are?
So the easiest way to look at the competitiveness of both chambers, you look at how the districts voted in 2016, the last time they held an election, and compare that to who's holding the seat now. So in the House, there are enough Republicans in districts that Hillary Clinton carried that Democrats are pretty bullish on being able to, if not flip the House, which I think is pretty likely, or at least make gains and make it a more narrowly divided chamber. The Senate's very different, where there's a lot of Democrats up that were elected in very Democratic years, times like 2006 and 2012, that now are up for re-election in states that Trump won. And so that creates a more difficult map, and there's only two, three, four, maybe, states that Democrats could flip and gain, whereas there's over 20 Democratic seats up that Republicans could flip, although most of those will not be as competitive. So yes, the House is much more likely to flip, although there is a slim likelihood that Democrats could do the same in the Senate. Other issues that could pop up, you mentioned health care, net neutrality. I think Democrats think they can organize around, especially younger people who, like myself, seem to live online. Immigration will be an issue. You're seeing candidates rally around this, especially in border states like Texas. Senator Cruz, who we mentioned earlier, is up for re-election, is running against Democratic Congressman Beto O'Rourke, and that's been an issue there. I think you will see talk about taxes, and Republicans will talk about whether the tax bill that they passed was good for the middle class, and Democrats will argue it was too good to corporations and the wealthy. And so that debate will play out. I think those will probably be the three key issues. And then as well as whatever sort of the news of the day, one that all candidates are going to have a tough time doing is separating themselves from the 24-hour news cycle. President Trump and the news coming out of Washington does tend to dominate attention. It makes it very tough to have a message outside of that. So that'll be a dynamic worth watching over the next few months.
That also makes this particular election cycle very different from some of the more recent past ones with President Trump in the White House and the way the media sort of responds to his social media and his policy stuff and all that. So we have a tradition of a rapid fire. That is how we wrap up each of our episodes. So very quickly, what is your favorite food?
I do love sushi. I just love a good sashimi with salmon or tuna. It's just a dive, especially with a little bit of wasabi on top. Clear your sinuses. It's a great feeling. Although pizza's a pretty close second, which I know are very different, but depending on how I'm feeling that day. So I would have to say sushi.
Okay. Wasabi, yeah, spicy. What is your favorite thing about the Garden State?
So I am a lifelong Yankees and Giants fan. Actually, my prized possession, it's sitting right in front of my TV, is a signed foul ball from Derek Jeter. I followed that team when I was a kid. My parents told me to root for them, and I just kept at it. We actually just saw them a couple of days ago in their sort of game and a half they played against the Nationals, and that was a lot of fun.
Right, right. And I have a friend who, much like you, is a really big
Yankees
fan, and he's always, trying to get in a Yankees game. He's always trying to find a TV, especially if you're outside.
Do you have a pet?
It's tough because they don't play in D.C. that often.
No, they don't.
Right, right.
No, I was just trying to make the rapid fire very rapid. So do you have a pet?
My parents have a dog named Milo who is a little energetic, but he is very sweet, and I'm actually going to see him in about a week for July 4th, so I'm very excited about that.
Oh, wonderful. All right. Well, thank you, Zach, for your time, and thank you for your expert analysis. And we will look forward to what happens on Tuesday in the Maryland primaries, and then on to the midterms. So thank you for your time.
Thanks, Zach.
Happy to do it. Yeah, have a good one.
You too.
You too.
This has been Between the Beltways, a production of the AOS 21 Podcast Network. Find it each month on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.aois21.com. Keep up with the news between episodes on our Facebook at facebook.com/BTBeltways, on Twitter at BTBeltways, and on our WordPress blog, betweenthebeltways.wordpress.com.
Copyright 2018, AOS 21 Media, LLC. All rights reserved. AOS 21 Media. What do you want your story to be?